kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have the following to share with you, always starting with the latest on health and healing. Good news if you know someone who is suffering from cancer, because they are now finally acknowledging what we have been saying for a long time, that combining exercise and nutrition can make an enormous difference. Also, tart cherries, they can combat post-exercise oxidative and inflammation responses. Additionally, the low-carbohydrate Mediterranean diet treats type 2 diabetes and reduces the need for diabetic drugs. That can help explain why so many people who have followed our advice have been able to give up all medications, and their doctors are monitoring them. They don't need them. Now, the interesting part, you would think that one of these doctors would call and say, could you share the protocol? I've never had such a call. But they're doing well. Now I'll explain why. Also, the new information on vitamin D and what it does for those of you who want to prevent strokes. Magnesium also lessens the risk of a stroke, and a lot more on natural healing. We're going to have a lot of commentaries today. Time permitting, nearly one quarter of U.S. children are in dire poverty. That's one quarter. That's according to the latest information from a research report from the N.E. Casey Foundation. That's 16 million children living in dire poverty. And about 45% of children in the U.S. live in households whose incomes fall below 200% of the federal poverty line. Then if you add in how many children are living in at or just slightly above the poverty level, you're at almost 80% of all children in the United States. So here's a question. With all that's going on in the world, wouldn't you think that helping the needy, hungry, and impoverished children in the United States would be someone's priority? But it isn't on any list. Also today, water wars beginning in California from our environmental segment. We predicted this, that we would have water wars in the United States in at least 9 states. Already, they're starting now as I speak in California. I'll give you that. We have something going on in the United States that, to me, would be analogous to 1934 in Germany. I see us becoming a fascistic police state with no rights at all for the average citizen, except those that are given by those in power. The Constitution becomes an afterthought. The Bill of Rights, shredded. Due process, habeas corpus, forget about it. The megalomaniac, sociopathic, psychopathic, completely dysfunctional, low-life people who run our country at every level, from governors to legislators, from city council members to mayors, people who need power over other people should be the last person in the world who's given power. Why do we, the citizens, tolerate this? These people are so blatant that they don't even have to hide their motives any longer. A part of that is the legal child kidnapping that's been occurring and has been accelerating. Has the United States become one of the most dangerous places in the world for children to live? Brian Shilhavy of Health Impact News believes so, and will give you specific examples. Now, mind you, I'm having the person who wrote the article exposing the child custody services as a major fraud and detrimental to the children's health on as a guest. This is a separate issue, but I'll deal with this also. Also today, from Glenn Ford, from Black Agenda Report, Obama's Hot War. My guest today is Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and he will be going into depth about the understanding and unraveling the confusion and propaganda over the downing of the Malaysian airline MH17. How is it that the American media, especially the conservative media, came immediately out and blamed Putin? Was he guilty or not? He'll unravel it. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. One of the common denominators of alternative cancer protocols, whether it's Dr. Issels or Charlotte Gerson or Dr. Ibisi, they all focused upon improving the diet, behavior modification, and exercise. We have a lot that we can now show that each one of those are important. Taken together, it can be a lifesaver. This is from the Elizabeth Breyer Hospital in Ottawa. Quote, patients with advanced cancer can benefit from a rehabilitation program combining exercise, nutritional counseling, and symptom control. This was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. And it showed, quote, cancer rehabilitation is a process that assists a person with cancer diagnosis to obtain optimal physical, social, psychological, and vocational functioning within the limits created by the disease and its treatment. And then it goes on to talk about how important these are. Interesting, because these have never been considered important in the United States. What do we do here? We do three things. First, surgery, which I actually support when it's possible. Chemotherapy and radiation, which I do not support because the science is not on their side. Yes, you can shrink a tumor. That's not difficult to do. But at what cost? And have you actually eliminated the underlying cause of the cancer? No. As a result, secondary cancers frequently reappear within months or years, and then the person has no immune system, and as a result, is just overwhelmed. So when you start to talk about what other things can make a difference, we don't follow that. We should. It could save lives. Tart cherries, they're really good for you. They turn off pain. There are multiple studies on this. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. What it says is that daily consumption of the Montmorency tart cherry concentrate can reduce the increase in markers of inflammation and oxidative stress after exercise. Two daily doses of tart cherry concentrate was associated with a significant lowering of interleukin-6 and high-sensitivity C-reactive protein compared to placebo. Quote, this is the first study to investigate the impact of Montmorency cherries on systemic inflammatory and oxidative stress induced by a series of metabolically challenging cycling bouts. This was done at University in England and University of Stirling in Scotland, University of Ulster in Northern Ireland. Quote, despite both groups demonstrating a similar drop-off in performance and no differences in time trial performance, the results show that both oxidative stress and inflammatory responses were attenuated, meaning reduced, with the Montmorency cherry concentrate supplements versus a placebo. Okay. Then why don't we look at what it could do for any form of exercise? Because if it works for cycling, it's going to work for running, jogging, power walking, swimming. So if you're exercising, after you complete your exercise, when your body's flooding with cytokines, take some of the tart cherry concentrate, and you'll reduce the negative consequences of the cycling or running or exercise, but you'll get the benefit of it. There is no question at all that the Mediterranean diet is one of the healthiest diets in the world. And different forms of it were modified. You can have a vegan form of it. You could have a fish form of it. If you've gone to the Mediterranean, you realize that some people, especially the French, eat a lot of it. But if you're looking at those people who live near the coastal regions, they generally don't. But what they mainly have is they have legumes, beans, grains, whole grains, lots of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, and red wine. That's what really marks it as a unique diet. The newest study from the University Hospital at the Second University of Naples in Italy did a study that found that the Mediterranean diet treats type 2 diabetes and decreases the need for diabetic medications. This was sponsored by the American Diabetes Association, and they took 215 middle-aged men and women who had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. They were divided into two groups. One group was given a low-fat diet, and the other was given a low-carbohydrate Mediterranean diet. And then they were followed for up to 8 years, and they found a substantial difference in getting them off the medications and helping them. In fact, the low-carbohydrate Mediterranean diet had a 15% complete remission, meaning they were no longer diabetic. So that, one more reason to go towards that kind of diet. If you want to help prevent a stroke, take magnesium. There is a good study, and it wasn't a lot of magnesium. It was only 379 milligrams. I start people at 800 milligrams. But it was a 14-year follow-up of 2,700 cerebral infarcts, the most common type of stroke involving blockage blood flow of the brain, and it was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine. What they found was magnesium lessens stroke risk, especially in males, and especially males who smoke. Well, an awful lot of middle-aged men smoke, so if you know someone who is a middle-aged man who smokes, try to encourage him to take magnesium, just one magnesium a day. That could help reduce the effect. Now, if you knew someone who wanted to prevent a stroke, who was very health conscious, men or women, take two a day. Take one in the morning and take one in the early evening, and that'll help prevent a stroke during the night. Mothers should always make sure that they're having the omega-3 fatty acids when they're pregnant, because if they're deficient, it could impact the neurological development of the developing fetus. Now, we know that the typical American diet fails to provide an adequate amount of omega-3 fatty acids, leaving infants at risk of impaired neurological development. In this study, they found that women who consumed large amounts of meat and were deficient in the omega-3 fatty acids, they were measuring their blood chemistries, ended up with having babies with neurological maturity problems, and especially for the eyes and the brain. So doesn't take much, but get your omega-3s if you're pregnant. Also, exercise reduces fatigue among inactive adults. We have too much time we sit in front of a computer or on the telephone or in front of a television. And we need to be exercising more. And as a result, the people who are sitting the most complain of fatigue the most. So, yes, it's one thing being fatigued if you exercise a lot. That's normal, in which case you let your body rest. You can soak in some Epsom salts. Take 4 quarts of Epsom salts. Have some lukewarm water. Pour in the Epsom salts and just soak for a half hour. It'll do you a lot of good. But we're talking about not exercising. Now, there are multiple studies, that report that regular exercise, I'm talking 5 days a week for an hour each day, increases energy and stamina, especially if you have heart disease, cancer, chronic fatigue syndrome. And it boosts energy. And then they did this study that proved it. So, want to alleviate fatigue? Exercise. Green tea extract increases fat burning, improves insulin sensitivity. This is the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So they found that you can burn fat, you can have better blood sugar, if you take your green tea. And also a really good study shows that cancer patients are benefited by supplements. The review looked at 32 separate studies and on the use of vitamins and minerals by adult cancer patients. And they found that up to 81% of the patients use some type of vitamin or mineral supplement. And there was a benefit to them. So coenzyme Q10 is particularly important. And it can reduce the cardiotoxicity of chemotherapy drugs. The omega-3 fatty acids can ameliorate cancer-related cachexia or weight loss. And vitamin C could simply improve your survival if you suffer from cancer. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest in health and nutrition reporting. Now we want to go to our environmental segment. I want to share with you a brief report from Ethan Huff, Natural News. And this was in the Los Angeles Daily News. It's about water wars. They've begun in California. Quote, now in its third year of record-breaking drought conditions, the water-deprived state of California is reportedly beefing up its law enforcement to crack down on so-called water abusers who use too much. In Los Angeles, a full-time water cop, with three more on the way, now patrols the streets daily looking for violators. In addition, and it's an indication of the escalating water wars taking place in the West. More than 75% of California's water stock is currently devoted to agriculture, with the remaining 25% nourishing residents and feeding lawns and washing cars. But with an ever-growing population and an increasing demand, clean water is increasingly becoming a rarity in the Golden State. And because of this, drought restrictions have been enacted in many areas that restrict when and how much water can be used for secondary purposes, rules that many residents continually flout. In years past, the state was able to get away with relatively loose enforcement of these water rules, given the caveat that at least some people would abide by them out of principle, conserving just enough of water to get by. But as drought conditions continue to break record levels, and with an underperforming El Nino season expected this fall, stricter enforcement of water restrictions is necessary. Quote, everything has changed with the drought. And that's the one-man enforcement arm of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, Water Conservation, a man named Rick Silva. He patrols neighborhoods looking for violators, and we're upping our enforcement. We're getting more staff. Now, Silva is focusing primarily on educating Californians about the drought, issuing verbal warnings and constructive criticisms in most cases rather than monetary fines. But that could soon change as the water wars mount, and particularly as water usage increases in many parts of the state despite the continuing drought. All along the California coast, for instance, where most of the state's wealthy people live, water usage has jumped 8%. And in Los Angeles, where water conservation efforts have been largely successful due to strong citizen support, water usage has jumped 5% in the last year. Even though officers have more aggressively issued fines up to $600 per violation. Quote, for us, it's not about being heavy-handed. It's about educating, eliciting a change. People know it's a drought. If they know better, they'll comply. It's not just California's urban dwellers that are having to change their water usage habits. Many California farmers face devastation due to heavy restrictions that stem from not only from the drought, but also from water management requirements that threaten to leave some of them with zero access to water this year. Quote, this year is a whole new level of crazy, said one of the farmers in this the Fresno Bee. The group represents farmers who are slated to be cut off from water supply altogether, completely, due to state-mandated restrictions that require fresh water to be diverted from farms into the ocean. The purpose of this, some environmentalists, is to protect native fish species from devastation. But the cost will be close to 3 million acres of California farmland and 25 million California residents not having water. That's really serious. But this has been going on for a long time. Now for some commentaries before we take a break in a little bit and go to our guest. This is from Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report. It's a short commentary. It's entitled Obama's Hot War. The United States, quote, has set the world on fire. It is nonsense to talk of a new Cold War when what the world is witnessing is as intense and horrifically destructive as at any period since World War II. Virtually every one of these armed conflicts has been methodically set in motion by the only power capable of perpetrating such massive simultaneous mayhem, the United States, along with its underlings in London, Paris, and Tel Aviv. Washington is embarked on a mad, scorched-earth policy to terrorize the planet into submission through relentless escalation into a global state of war. Unable to maintain its dominance through trade and competition, the U.S. goes beyond the brink to plunge the whole planet into a cauldron of death. As Russia is learning, it is extremely difficult to avoid war when a great power insists on imposing it. That is one lesson inflicted on us the world 75 years ago by Nazi Germany. Whoever coined the phrase, "No drama Obama," should be sentenced to a lifetime of silence. The first black president systematically brought swastika-wearing fascist power in Ukraine to start a war on Russia's borders. The passengers of the Malayan airline are victims of Obama's carefully crafted apocalypse, a prefabricated conflict that could consume us all. Obama methodically and without provocation laid waste to Libya and Syria, and now the jihadists unleashed by the United States and its allies are destroying Iraq all over again and threatening to erase Lebanon and Jordan and even the oil kingdoms of the Gulf. Obama has signed yet another blank check for Israel's ghastly war of ethnic annihilation in Gaza, a crime against humanity for which the U.S. is fully as culpable as the apartheid Jewish state, which could not exist if it were not part of the U.S. superpower's global war machine. Those who say the United States is adrift or has no coherent foreign policy are colossally wrong. Washington's policy is the constant fomenting of war for the subjugation of the planet or the world's destruction if the U.S. cannot remain number one. The Americans have made Africa into a killing field. Somalia and its people have been smashed and dispersed, setting the whole Horn of Africa ablaze. Ethiopia commits multiple genocides under U.S. sponsorship, while Washington's mercenaries in Rwanda and Uganda grow fat on the bones of 6 million Congolese. South Sudan thrashes in agony, the result of dismemberment by America, European and Israeli ghouls. The sounds of chaos and mass murder reverberate from the bottom to the top through the vast shell region and now deep into West Africa, a direct result of U.S. criminal aggressive war and regime change in Libya. Obama pivots to East Asia with the goal of turning Japan into a militaristic state and with the invitation to rejoin, after all these years, the game of global conquest. Poor Afghanistan and Pakistan have no future at all unless the U.S. leaves the region and allows them to develop an organic partnership with China. But a world based upon mutually beneficial relations among peoples has no room for empire, which is why the empire wages war against the world. End quote from Glenn Ford. Also, this is important. I'd like to get your feedback later on in the program about it. This is from Andrea Damon. A report entitled Nearly One Quarter of U.S. Children in Poverty, quote, nearly one in four children in the United States lives in a family below the federal poverty line, according to the N.E. Casey Foundation. A total of 16.3 million children live in poverty, and 45% of children in the United States live in a household whose incomes fall below 200% of the federal poverty line. The annual report, titled Kids Count Data Book, compiles data on children's economic well-being, education, health, and family support. It concludes that, quote, inequalities among children remain deep and stubbornly persistent. The report is an indictment of the state of American society nearly 6 years after the onset of financial crisis 2008. And while the Obama administration and the media have proclaimed an economic recovery, conditions of life for the vast majority of the population continues to deteriorate. The report notes that the percentage of children in poverty hit 23% in 2012, up sharply from 16% in 2000. Some states are much worse. For almost the entire American South, the share of children in poverty is more than 25%. These conditions are the product of a ruthless class policy pursued at all levels of government. While trillions of dollars have been made available to Wall Street, sending both the stock markets and corporate profits to record highs, economic growth has stagnated, social programs have been slashed, and public services decimated, while prices of many basic items are on the rise. Jobs that have been created are overwhelmingly part-time or low-wage. Quote, we've yet to see the recovery from the economic recession, said the director of policy reform at the NEKC Foundation. Quote, the child poverty rate is connected to parents' employment and how much they're getting paid. The jobs that are being created in this economy, including temporary and low-wage jobs, are not good enough to keep children out of poverty. Declining economic opportunity for parents without a college degree in the context of growing inequality has meant that children's life chances are increasingly constrained by the socioeconomic status of their parents. End quote. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Let's say hello to Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. He is one of the most progressive political and economic thinkers, commentators on the state of the nation, our government dysfunction, political corruption, global and domestic interest, the war on terror. He is from Wall Street. He worked for the Wall Street Journal. He is from Washington, D.C. He was an insider. He was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Reagan's administration. He has a formidable academic background, and he is an author also. He is a contributor to the Trends Journal. His latest work is entitled How America Was Lost from 9/11 to the Police Warfare State. His website is paulcraigroberts.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
I wanted to bring on, you on the program to help unravel the confusion in the media and reporting concerning the who did it downing the Malaysian airline MH17 over the Ukraine, the dissident regent bordering Russia. Now, Putin and Russia's stance has remained constant. What we are observing from the Obama administration is an amoebic change of interpretations and accusations. Yesterday, the U.S. again changed its tune, calling the downing an accident by the Ukrainian dissidents. Furthermore, the U.S. intelligence officials acknowledged that we had no information regarding Russia's direct involvement in the crash, which contradicted John Kerry's accusation that a BUK rocket was launched by Russia. And now we also know that the Ukrainian fascist government possesses these same missiles and had them in the same area at the same time. However, the push for sanctions and economic warfare against Russia continues, while the Kyiv government continues its indiscriminate bombing of the Donetsk region with the full support of the U.S. and its allies. So on the one hand, I'm confused about how the United States could say it's against terrorism and indiscriminate killing of civilians when that's exactly what the Ukrainian military has been doing for 2 months now, and with these buildings being blown up, and the killing of civilians, yet it's not reported. You don't see this as a major issue in the American media. And, of course, the entire right media immediately said that it, even before any evidence was in, that it was Putin, it was his fault, and that's why you start hearing those neocons on Fox say, you know, let Obama get tough. You know, we should be militarizing the Ukraine. We should have NATO there. We should show them that, you know, there's a consequence. And I'm thinking, yes, and you're the same people who said there were weapons of mass destruction. And you're the same people that said Vietnam was going to fall and there'd be domino effect. And all these other stupid analogies they have made, which never were true. The forum is yours. Take your time and give us your interpretation.
Well, Gary, I just listened to you explain the complete lack of any interest on the part of police and child protective services in facts. And that's also true of Washington's foreign policy. They have no interest whatsoever in facts. It's been obvious from the beginning that if Washington had any facts, they would have released them. And we've also known from the beginning that Washington had a satellite precisely above the area at the time the Malaysian airliner was downed. And so Washington would have photographs of everything that happened. And if these photographs implicated Russia and or the so-called separatists, they would have been instantly released to great fanfare. But only Russia has released the satellite photos. And the only facts that we have is that the Ukrainians had these weapons in the vicinity when the airliner was brought down. Now, what is going on is that we are witnessing the operation of the Brzezinski Doctrine and the Wolfowitz Doctrine. And these doctrines are similar in that they say that United States foreign policy has as its primary purpose to prevent the rise of Russia, because Russia is a large enough country and it could control a sufficiently large landmass to acquire power. And this power could get in the way of Washington's exercise of hegemony over the world. And therefore, Russia cannot be permitted to rise. They're also busy at work to apply this to China. Well, when the Russian government, together with the British Parliament, blocked the American military invasion of Syria, and when the Russian government defused the Iranian situation that Washington intended to take the war, Washington came to the conclusion that Russia was too influential and was in Washington's way, and therefore engineered the coup in the Ukraine. And the purpose of the coup was to bring direct strategic threats to Russia herself, so that the government would have problems to deal with that would hinder its ability to get in Washington's way elsewhere. And Washington also saw this as an opportunity to demonize Russia and the president of Russia, and to use this demonization to break up the growing economic and political relationships between Russia and Western Europe. Relationships had grown dramatically. They are quite strong, and Washington was afraid that it would pull Europe out of Washington's control, and therefore the empire would be endangered, in fact, broken up. So what we saw initially, Washington intended to grab all of the Ukraine, including Crimea, so they could evict Russia from the Black Sea naval base in Crimea. That would, of course, deprive Russia of a warm water port, of their access to the Mediterranean, and would make it easier for Washington to close down Syria, because of the Russians have a naval base at Tartus in Syria. So when the Crimeans voted to return to Russia from whence they had come, and Putin accepted it, then Washington saw that they had lost that chance, but that they had another one, and that was to begin the hostilities from the new puppet government in Kiev that Washington had installed against the so-called separatists in eastern and southern Ukraine. Those territories are former Russian territories. They were added to the Ukraine by various Communist Party officials at the time when Russia and Ukraine were both part of the same country, the Soviet Union. So those people in eastern and southern Ukraine did not go along with the Russophobic attitude of the government that Washington had installed in Kiev. And so this was used to brand them as terrorists, because it's quite all right to kill terrorists, remember? And so branded as terrorists, they've been under attack. When the airliner came down, this was another grand opportunity for Washington. Washington was dismayed that the European Union had refused to go along with Washington's unilateral sanctions against Russia. And so Washington said, we'll use this incident to demonize Russia such that the European Union will not be able to resist our pressure to go along with sanctions that will hurt Europe far more than Russia, but will break up these growing economic and political relationships and take away the danger that we will lose our European empire. So that's the situation there. Now, it's getting progressively worse. The U.S. intelligence agencies informed the White House that the spy photographs of the American satellite does not support the American position. And Obama had to permit them the other day to have a press conference and explain to the media that there was no direct evidence of Russian involvement. That's all they were allowed to say. But what is happening is, regardless of this, the propaganda continues that Russia is responsible. And we have more and more pressure being put on the Europeans to accept the sanctions. Now, look at this. You see, if you have sanctions on Russia for something that it is not responsible for, but no sanctions on the Ukraine for bombing residential areas in eastern and southern Ukraine, then you send the message to Kiev to continue the punitive operations that allegedly the Europeans and the Russians want to stop. Putin keeps saying this has to be settled in negotiations, not by bombing civilian apartment complexes. The other thing we notice is that today or yesterday, the American commander of the NATO forces has said, now we must have a huge military buildup in Poland on the Russian border that we can be prepared for a blitz against Russia, that we have to forestall Russian aggression by having blitzkrieg forces on their border in Poland. And introduced into Congress now is the so-called Russian Aggression Prevention Act of 2014. And this, what Russian aggression? There's none. But it's being created, you see, by we introduce a bill against Russian aggression. We have the NATO commander say we've got Russian aggression, we've got to protect against it by building up forces. So the allegations against the Russians have escalated. It's now we have to confront the Russian aggression and be prepared to deal with it. Well, I think that we're well on our way to a confrontation that could be a major war. And the Russians, or Putin, they keep relying on facts, on goodwill. They keep saying, here are our facts, what facts have you got, let's see what's going on. And Washington keeps escalating the charges. So I think what we see is that the Russians, wanting to be accepted by the West, to be part of the West, are, and that desire makes them susceptible to being deceived and manipulated. And so a situation that I think the Russians could have controlled early simply by moving in troops is now developing into a much more dangerous situation. And once we have a Russian Aggression Prevention Act, if this thing passes, it will have a momentum of its own. And it will lead to more warlike provocations. And at some point, the Russians will have to realize that there is no goodwill in the West toward Russia and that they cannot rely on diplomacy or negotiations. And at that point, I think it will be a tragedy.
Yes. Okay. Professor Roberts, there's some new information today about how the head of the militia in the Ukraine is fighting the Kyiv government. Did have, or he was aware, though he had not seen it, that they also had missiles. But at the same time, we also know that there was enormous amount of effort to attack the separatists there on that very day, in that very vicinity, and he was questioning why, what was their motive. So right now, there is uncertainty about who may have fired it, what were the circumstances, but could you give us this larger picture?
Are we being
set up as a country to start a whole new war with Russia?
Exactly.
Is that really what's behind all this?
Exactly. Well, no. What's behind it is the Wolfowitz and Brzezinski doctrine to prevent the rise of Russia. And I think the United States and Washington, they would be prepared to go to war to do that, but they hope to achieve that without war. They hope to do it just by forcing Europe to break off relations with Russia and by isolating Russia and by demonizing it with the constant stream of ever-escalating lies. As I said, I think we know who did it because the Russian satellite photographs have been released, and they show that the only missiles capable of reaching that altitude of 33,000 feet present in the location at the time are Ukrainian, and they're under control of Ukrainian forces. If Washington has different information, they have not released it. And they have been requested on numerous occasions by both the president of Russia and by the Russian Defense Ministry to please release their satellite photos. And let's see if yours show separatists with these weapons. Well, Washington refuses to release them. And under pressure from the intelligence, the analysts, not the black ops, but the analysts, the CIA, Obama finally had to allow the agency to announce there's no direct evidence implicating Russia. Now, the separatists that you spoke of, who made that statement, he is not the commander. He is one commander, or possibly a former commander. He's described in the news report as being at odds with the other separatist commanders. And he says he doesn't know what unit had the missile or who fired it. he has no specific information, but he has a theory. And what his theory is that the Ukraine, the puppet government in Kiev, tricked the separatists by attacking from the air at the time that the Malaysian airliner was to fly over that part of the Ukraine, and also deceived the separatists by sending up the fighter bomber jets, the military plane, in the vicinity of the airliner. And we do know for a fact that Ukrainian fighter bombers were present in the vicinity of the airliner because the Russians have released the data and the flight patterns of those planes. And so this separatist is theorizing that the Ukrainians deceived the separatists into thinking that it was a military plane because it was surrounded by military planes and because they were under attack. That's his theory. But there's no evidence for this theory, and if Washington has it, they should release it. Again, they do have the spy photographs. The American satellite was directly over the site at the time the airliner came down, and so there would be information in those photographs. And if they contradict the information in the Russian ones that have been released, I think Washington surely would have released them.
It's in conclusion, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, you have been one of the reasonable voices, being a former top journalist with the Wall Street Journal, being an expert in political corruption, global and domestic economic threats, war on terror, and most importantly, the decline in human values in American society. When you look at what's going on, then you look at the media and you see how the media immediately rushes to a conclusion. And then you start to ask, what is the motive of the media? Who's feeding this? What ideology is behind this? And then you just have to step back and you start seeing what we did in Libya, what we tried to do in Syria or did do in Syria, how much we've done around the world that when we look in historical context, we were wrong. We destabilized countries. We caused massive human suffering. So if you want to take on someone because the ideologues see it from whatever perspective motivation they have as a good thing, I'm saying right now is when we need voices of reason so we don't get into another Cold War with Russia or China or anyone else. We've had enough, and what good have they done? So thank you for being out there, and thank you for bringing your reason to our program.
Well, thank you, Gary, and appreciate that you shared your audience.
Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is the author of How America Was Lost from 9/11 to the Police Warfare State. His website is paulcraigroberts.org. In the final segment of our program today, I'm going to share a bit of a commentary from the publication In the Public Interest about out of control, the coast-to-coast failures of outsourcing public service to public corporations, private corporations, because we've been led to believe that these are good, they save money. No, they're not. According to their extensive research, quote, eager for quick cash, state and local governments across America have for decades handed over control of critical public services and assets to corporations that promise to handle them better, faster, and cheaper. Unfortunately for taxpayers, not only has outsourcing these services failed to keep their promise, but too often it undermines transparency, accountability, shared prosperity, and competition. The underpinnings of democracy itself. Policymakers likely will consider more outsourcing proposals. Out of control, the coast-to-coast failures of outsourcing public service to for-profit corporations serves as a cautionary tale for lawmakers and taxpayers alike. Too often, outsourcing means taxpayers have little say over how tax dollars are spent and no say on actions taken by private companies to control our public services. Outsourcing means taxpayers cannot vote out executives who make decisions that hurt public health and safety. Outsourcing means taxpayers are contractually stuck with a monopoly run by a single corporation, and those contracts often last decades. And outsourcing too often means a race to the bottom for the local economy as wages and benefits fall while corporate profits rise. Now, just to give you a few examples on this. This is in Connecticut, Hawaii, and Vermont. Same company, different rules for state health care exchanges. Quote, Maximus, a company that provides business process services to government health and human service agencies, is one of the largest privatizers of social services in America and has several contracts with state governments to run state health exchanges associated with the Affordable Care Act. National Public Radio recently examined Maximus contracts from several states, including Connecticut, Hawaii, and Vermont. In Connecticut, the investigator was able to receive a copy of the call center contract between Maximus and the state, but all of the language about pricing was redacted. In emails to the state, the company argued that releasing its pricing information would, quote, result in irreparable economic damage to Maximus and significantly weaken its competitive position in the marketplace, end quote. As a result, taxpayers don't know how much Connecticut is paying its contractor. The company values the Connecticut contract at $15 million, but the description of those fees and how they are calculated is not public information. Connecticut allows the contractor to black out what it thinks is proprietary information. Even worse, in Hawaiian Maximus, contract with the state is completely exempt from open records laws. However, Maximus' concerns in Connecticut weren't enough to prevent it from signing a contract with Vermont. The state publicly posted a complete copy of its contract with Maximus on a state website. The public has easy access to the entire contract, which contains all pricing information and other important standards, like how long a call can be on hold, what is public information in Vermont should be considered proprietary in Connecticut and Hawaii. Then you end up with water companies. They fail to pay taxes. They lose millions of gallons of water. I'll give you one example. In Jenkinsville, South Carolina, unlike Vermont, many cities and states allow government contractors to circumvent common sense transparency laws and hide from taxpayers what should be public information about services and programs. Recently in South Carolina, the Jenkinsville Water Company failed to pay state employee payroll taxes, lost millions of gallons of water, and could not account for tens of thousands of dollars. Concerned about mismanagement of funds, residents and journalists submitted open record requests to the company seeking copies of financial records, including audited financial statements and budgets. The company refused to comply. State Senator Creighton Coleman, Democrat of Fairfield, sought an opinion from South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson to determine whether the company was bound by the state's open record laws. The Attorney General's office stated that the Jenkinsville Water Company had to disclose the records, but even after the opinion was issued, the company refused to hand over documents, leading to a lawsuit filed by the Independent Herald newspaper. And so it goes, right across the country, from the CEO to taxpayers, quote, that's none of your damn business. In Arkansas, when people wanted to know about the services, take almost every single part of the for-privatizing corporate interest, and you'll see that they run foster care centers that are abusive to children. They have broken promises. It doesn't save us money. In fact, in the case of New York City, there was 1,000% cost overrun. Then exactly who benefits from all this? The companies do. Benefits denied to patients with muscular dystrophy and cerebral palsy from one privatizing company in Kansas. And so what you have is this. What you have is you have thousands of privatized operations going on, from privatizing water and sanitation and prisons, and people are not aware of this. Chicago's parking meters, just reckless outsourcing. Why? Because there are 36,000 parking meters, and a corporation was willing to give $1.2 billion in the deal to Chicago. Sounds like a good deal. No, they will end up making $11.6 billion with the contract. Do you get better services? No, you don't. In fact, one case, low wages at for-profit prisons means high risk of violence. They get crappy food. They can be exploited where they are working at the lowest wages ever, and yet no one knows about it. In fact, no public road improvements for 99 years, according to a contract in Denver that no one paid attention to. So just remember, the next time you hear a politician saying, or a board somewhere saying, we're going to privatize some historical public services, public property, something, just intervene. It's not in our interest. We don't get a great deal. And yet, that is what happens when you're politically connected. And it's unfortunate. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.